Onu girişimin önünde çevirdiğiniz bir Resulü Kaya Fakir Tüterin Zeynep Esmer Sügülü Beyni Var Sügül Şeytan Yomunu Bistam Sepitim Zeynep Mütüley Sayın Hüku Kadam Ayam Nedati Safın Dendikam Manisa Kabatı Dersa Fibesin Dubai Pıça Petit Tenam Kamerim Fogbaş Bilmiyorum. From the Bhagavad Gita, starting in the beginning, and we got up to text 30. So up until this point, Arjuna, of course, was feeling terrible about the thought of having to fight in a battle and killing his dear relatives. And Krishna responded very unsympathetically, in a sense. He said, there is no question of you killing your relatives because the soul is eternal and they are the soul. The soul can neither be cut, burnt, withered by the wind, dried, and nahanyate hanyamane sharire. When the body dies, the soul remains alive. It cannot be killed. It cannot die. There is no question of you killing because the soul cannot die. And then in the second, this was of course after Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. And then in the second chapter, that was the first part of the second chapter, wherein Krishna in many ways sought to dispel Arjuna's grief through jnana, through knowledge. And the basic essential knowledge is that we are eternal. We are not the bodies, but we are eternal. Of course, there is more to knowledge than just that, but this is the essential principle of knowledge, that we are eternal. Now, how much of the day are we thinking of ourselves as eternal? Probably not very much. Most of the day we go through life not thinking on even that deep a philosophical level. We just go through life and we go from one activity to the next, and the activities tend to become absorbed. We absorb our consciousness in the activities and we neglect to understand that we are eternal and that the material world is Krishna's energy, and in other words, we forget about Krishna. But in any case, there's a central principle that we're eternal. And we are not slain when the body is slain. And our identification, our self-identification, is placed improperly on things that have actually nothing to do with us. So after describing this, and in text 30, Krishna summarizes these jnana type of instructions to Arjuna, which he gives for the purpose of creating renunciation in him, renunciation from the fruit of his work. And he wants Arjuna ultimately to act. Now, Krishna wants Arjuna to take part in the battle of Kurukshetra and fight. The ultimate reason he wants him to fight is because he wants Arjuna to be instrumental in fulfilling his own desire, because this is the perfection of the soul's activities, to be centered upon pleasing Krishna. When the soul's desires are harmonious with Krishna's desires, then the soul is happy, then the soul is rightly situated, then he experiences his actual position in relationship with Krishna. But because we tend to view things as Arjuna was viewing things, situations, centered upon what we think is good for us, and in a very, very small-minded way, Krishna wanted to detach him from that type of a vision, that type of a mentality, by explaining to him that the essential element of his vision, of his view, his conceptualization of reality is incorrect. Incorrect. All the time you've been collecting pieces of sand, thinking that they were the medium of financial exchange in Perth. And you're collecting sand and collecting sand, and someone says, well, you've collected a lot of sand, but it's worth nothing. So similarly, all our conceptions based on ourselves being the body, I've accumulated this and I've accumulated that, and I'm really expert at this, and I've bought this, and I've sold that, and I've defeated this one, and I have this, and all, just on and on and on, and I've achieved this, and everyone knows that I'm like this. All these things are just like the accumulation of sand. They have no value, because in a few years, the body will be turned back into its essential elements, and then where will you be? And the answer is, people don't know. So Arjuna was thinking in terms, even though obviously a great devotee, but he was thinking in terms of his body as his self, and being self-centered in that way, and this self-centeredness thinking on the thought level, on the mental level, on the actions level, on the words level, this self-centeredness is counterproductive to our happiness, even though we act in self-centered ways for our happiness. So Krishna wanted to turn Arjuna's concepts upside down. So he said, you're not your body. Has anyone ever told you you're not your body? Ooh.
My brother.
Your brother. How about your mother?
No.
Oh, you are your buddy and you are my son. When you go back to Kenya, don't tell her that. You can't talk to face me. I'm not my buddy. I'm not my son. Otherwise, she won't let you come back. Said, who will paint the fence at the temple? So then, after Krishna speaks this basic, very basic jnana instruction to Arjuna, then he's going to take another tact, another approach in getting Arjuna to fight. And this approach is one of activities. The first was jnana. Your objection to fighting was that so many people, beloved friends and relatives, will be killed. And the answer to that in terms of jnana is no, they cannot be killed because they're eternal souls. They will change their bodies at most. And that you have to tolerate. And then, so therefore you should fight. That's the basic point. Now Krishna's going to change his reasoning. And he says, considering your specific duty as a kshatriya, this is text 31. Swadharmam api chavicha. Your specific dharma, you're a kshatriya. You should know there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles. And so there is no need for hesitation. So Krishna is explaining it from a different point of view now. That you are a warrior, you are a kshatriya, it is your duty to protect, to hurt, to cut, to fight. And there is no better engagement for you than doing your duty. Because if one does one's duty, as Krishna is going to be described in the next verse, he says, happy are the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought. In other words, without looking to fight, but in the course of your kshatriya warrior duty, you will fight. So if these duties come to fight, they will open for you, for them, those who are kshatriyas, the doors of the heavenly planets. Which is just the opposite of what Arjuna was saying. Arjuna in the first chapter was saying, if I fight, there's going to be so much killing and the destroying of the family, And the result will be that I'll accrue so much sinful reactions, and therefore I will dwell forever in narak, in hell. Do they have that, the motorcycle gang here? No. The narak apsaras. They have them? But that's in India, they have it, the narak apsaras.
In Kenya. The coffin
huh?
We have the coffin chaiters over here.
Oh, that there is no translation. Except when you burn the body, you're a coffin cheater. They don't even use the coffin. But anyway, the narak apsaras. So you won't actually, if you engage in your duty, it's not that you will go to hell, but rather, if you do your duty as a fighter, you'll actually go to heaven. And not only that, if you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, you will certainly incur sin. So it's just the opposite of what Arjuna had said. For neglecting your duties, and thus you lose your reputation as a fighter, so not only will you incur sin, but you are known as the powerful wielder of the bow, Arjuna, all over the world. Everyone says, here is Arjuna, the great fighter, the great archer. So you will become infamous. And Krishna is going to say in the next verse, people will always speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. What does that mean, that dishonor is worse than death?
It means if your reputation has been slighted, death would be preferable.
And why? Why?
Because of false ego, pride.
But what happens if you're insulted? What happens? Okay, before you become angry, you feel bad. Okay, pain. Yeah. So when someone insults you, there's a saying that if someone pierces your body with a dart or something like that, there's pain for some time, a few weeks, but it heals. But if someone pierces your heart with sharp words, that pain can remain for years and years and years and years and years. And we see this, that maybe someone said something to us like 10 or 15 years ago, and we think we've forgotten, and then some little occurrence happens, or we see the person again, and then suddenly that painful, those words come right back to us, and we feel the pain again. Has anyone ever had that experience, or is it only you? You even have had that experience? You could. Yeah? Really? So that is pain. So the pain of infamy, of people laughing at you, of not taking you seriously, of criticizing you, you're walking down the road, and Arjuna, who was, everyone was saying, here's the greatest archer, the greatest bowman, and then everyone laughs. Oh, that would be more painful than the pain of death. That's Krishna's point. You will lose your reputation as a fighter, and people will always speak of your infamy. And for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. So Arjuna was saying before that it'll be more big-hearted and compassionate of me if I leave the battlefield, because I will show them that I'm not interested in gaining the kingdom at the cost of so many lives. I'm not like you people who don't care about anything but the kingdom. So I will be known as a very compassionate, great-hearted person. And Krishna is saying, no, just the opposite. You'll be known as a coward. And Yeah, Prabhupada says in the purport, Arjuna, if you leave the battlefield before the battle even begins, people will call you a coward. And if you think that people may call you bad names, but you will save your life by fleeing the battlefield, then my advice is that you do better by to die in the battle. For a respectable man like you, ill fame is worse than death. So you should not flee for fear of your life. Better to die in the battle. That will save you from the ill fame of misusing my friendship and from losing your prestige in society. Infamy, worse than death. So these people had such, this is the mood of a Kshatriya. You have a very strong Abhiman. What does Abhiman mean?
Ego.
Ego, yeah. Concept of yourself, like ego. So these Kshatriyas needed that. Oh, I am a Kshatriya. I can never turn down. If you challenge me, I must fight you. I will never turn my back on someone saying they wish to fight. You need a particular mood to be a Kshatriya, an actual warrior, an actual king. You need a specific mood that was very much bred into the family lineages of Kshatriyas. They had the natural tendencies due to Kshatriyas always marrying Kshatriyas. And even in the Punjab I think there are 9 different subcategories of Kshatriyas. This one's families, this one's highest, this one's second highest, third, fourth, something like that, 7 or 9. And you can't even, if you marry below, even in the Kshatriya family, one station below, especially if the woman is even one little station above the, on the 5th rung or the 6th rung, and the man's on the 4th rung, it's considered very bad because she'll be proud of her position and minimize him. So everything was very scientific. It was because people, if the Kshatriyas marry Kshatriyas, then there's a breeding line. So people nowadays want to be free from that type of a thing, but they'd have one mentality only. Now, when people just marry out of just affection or something like that, then the children, they have different mentalities, they have mixtures of many different types of ways of thinking within them. It becomes very confusing, actually. You know, part of me wants to buy the bike, another part of me wants to steal the bike, the other part of me wants to walk, the other part of me wants to... People's mentalities are so confused. And in the Veda culture, and I saw this when I went to there was one village near the birthplace of Pundarik Vidyanidhi in village is called Chattogram. What's it called in the, where was it? I can't remember what it's called. It's on the very east side, but the village right near, it's near Burma, it's a city on the very east side of Bangladesh.
Chittagong,
yes, exactly, Chittagong. But that's the British name of it, but then they call it Chattogram, means Chattogram, means 4 villages. So right near there, there's the birthplace of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and the Bhajan, and also who lived there, Mukunda Datta and Vasudev Datta. And they also had places in Navadvip. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a zamindar; he was a landholder there, and it's called Pundarik Dham. That's what it's. Have you been there? No. Very, very nice in the countryside, but there's a very big old-fashioned Vedic village, right next to it, and big village meaning like almost 100,000 people or something like that, but it's organized like a village. that all the Brahmins live in one area, but not only do the Brahmins live in one area, the Pujaris live in one area, within the Brahmin area, and the people who know Shastra live in another area, and the people who are the washermen live in another area, and the people who are the goldsmiths live in another area. So I remember hearing how it was so interesting, because you were always associating with people who thought the way you thought. Instead of, no one can have, everyone has different opinions continually, and with the people you talk to, you think that, well, I think that, and it's not very mentally, doesn't help with mental, having a stable mentality. So it was very, very interesting that on one level, it's very unmodern, but it had the effect of people knew who they were, they had a particular mentality, and they didn't feel, whatever it was, they acted in that way, and they could advance spiritually, materially. So their material life, their mental life, everything was in harmony with the ultimate purpose of life, the spiritual life. Now, everything, our mental life, our spiritual life, our material life, they're all in disharmony. Our bodies, everything is in disharmony. That's Kali Yuga. It's the age of quarrel. Everyone quarrels with themselves even continuously. Yeah, people, there's a common phrase that they say beating yourself up. You ever hear that? People say that? You ever hear that? Did I say that? Beating yourself up. You know that one? Shaky. You ever hear that one?
Yes.
Yes. It's like when you're all the time, just you have this little voice inside of you going, wah, 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 why are you doing that? Whatever you do, why are you turning left? Okay, I'll turn right. Why are you turning right? Wah, wah. You know, why are you going fast? Why are you going slow? Why did you do it? Why didn't you do it? Whatever you do, the little voice tells you just the opposite and gives you trouble continuously. So not only, this is Kali Yuga, where not only everyone argues with everyone else, but even everyone like continuously argues with yourself. Not you though. Yeah? You're peaceful inside?
No.
You have a little voice inside that tells you things? Does it sound like your mother or your father? Did you ever find that? Who does it sound like?
His brother.
His brother. You don't know. Well, listen next time. whose voice does your mind imitate? Your mother's or your father's?
No, it is coming in my mind and I speak.
Yeah, but I want to see the one that comes in your mind. The voice that comes to your mind say, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you getting up so late? Why are you doing that? Why don't you put away your socks?
My own voice.
Your own voice? Mm-hmm. Inside?
Yeah.
Wow. Very good. So this is Kali Yuga. So for a respectable person, these people were very much in harmony with themselves. And therefore they were peaceful in what, and this is the Vedic system, that everyone was successful in one sense. Everyone was allowed to be successful on the Varna and Ashrama level. So people, nowadays everyone feels like failures. And so Kali Yuga is so confusing, and yet everyone thinks that that the society is making progress, but everyone is thinking that they're failures, feeling bad about themselves, and dissatisfied, because dissatisfaction is born of the motive passion. So because of the increase in the motive passion, everyone is so dissatisfied. But in this old Vedic system, and everyone feels a failure, no matter what they have, it's not enough. But this Vedic system, very good. But people. I remember when I was in Hong Kong at first. Somehow or another, there was an election in England. And the Tories means Labour, liberal, right? Anyway, you don't know, this is Australia. It's the other. The Tories means the Conservative Party. Yeah, Conservative, and then there's the Labour Party. So the fellow who was running for Prime Minister, he made this statement, that the problem with England nowadays is that the lower classes are breeding too fast. And that was the end. They probably... Huh?
Things may be true, but you don't speak them when you're running for office. Never speak what's true. That's the first principle. You have to speak what people want to hear, so they vote for you. Yeah, exactly. Now you're learning.
So anyway, he actually said that, and boom, he was out. It was over. So Arjuna, all his arguments, Krishna is ripping apart. So he says that if you leave the battlefield now, because Arjuna had already thrown down his weapons and said, I shall not fight. So Krishna is pushing him, prodding him with his Kshatriya mood. So it's very interesting, after speaking about the importance of jnana, now Krishna is speaking on a completely different level, wanting him to fight on almost based on false ego. Well, he's just completely criticized that concept of life. And because whatever level Arjuna is thinking about, Krishna is showing him that you should fight. Whatever level he's thinking on, you should fight. And then ultimately, as the Bhagavad Gita ends, and we'll hear in a few more verses, Krishna says you should fight to please me. Because that level, not because you're not your body and all the other people aren't their bodies, and not because you go to heaven, and not because you'll lose your reputation if you don't fight. These are all, you should fight, but the best level of fighting is just simply because I desire it. But for one to act on that level, just to act for the pleasure of Krishna, and be fixed on that level, one needs to be very pure in heart and very clear and fixed in mind. Because I remember one time, one devotee, Prabhupada needed a service done, and the devotee said he would do it, and then it was a very difficult service. So after a few months, the devotee just, it's too difficult, and he sort of ran from the service and went back to his own country. And Prabhupada said it was just sentiment. His desire to do it. It wasn't based on depth of bhakti, depth of realization that is required. That means one's whole consciousness has to be aligned properly and surrendered. I'm doing this because it's pleasing to Krishna. And then if the other voices say, well, what about this and what about that and what about that, and who's going to take care of you and this, and these people are like this. No. The mind has to be completely firmly fixed in the pleasure of Krishna. And non-flickering. So therefore, the whole system in Kali Yuga, to keep the mind proper, to that it supports bhakti, not takes us in the, that supports our goal of life, not takes us in the opposite direction of what's good for us. This was the surrounding culture. And therefore, because it's so difficult in Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very kindly brought the Yuga Dharma, which is,
you don't know, then how will you do it? If you don't know what it is, you tell him. And chanting Krishna's names, Kalona, Stevana, 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 Bhaktivinoda. The chanting of Krishna's holy names. In Kali Yuga, there is no other way. Because Cheto Dharpa Namajanam, the heart is cleansed on such a deep level, and all
the contaminations, all the difficulties. If we take shelter of Krishna's names and chant offensively, they can all be removed. Kali Yuga is Kalo Dosha Nite Rajan. It is an ocean of faults. It is so difficult because we go in so many different directions at once. We have so many other desires. Not very qualified, everyone's always disturbed, minds are disturbed. So it's so difficult in Kali Yuga, and the outside culture doesn't at all support, rather it attacks seriousness in spiritual life, and it comes in the form of putting materialism in the form of spiritual life, and even Prabhupada said it's so difficult preaching in Kali Yuga because there's so many pseudo, false spiritual people saying this is religion and this is religion and this is spiritual and this is spiritual, and these things that, and most 99% don't have anything to do with religion, and people who are sincerely trying for something spiritual, it's bewildering for them because everyone says my way is the only way, our way is, and everyone else is wrong. So for an ordinary person without knowledge, it's so confusing. So therefore, because everything is so difficult in Kali Yuga, culture is against us, materialism, false spiritualism, pseudo fake religions, low thinking religions not based on knowledge, that the whole culture is, everyone's mixed up in their own minds, the bodies give trouble, therefore we need some special ticket in Kali Yuga, and that special ticket is that you can be with Krishna anytime you want, just sing his names without any offenses. Krishna will come immediately into your presence. He's already there, but he will manifest immediately. Now take it, take Krishna in the form of his holy name. Just take it, take it, take it. He's saying, just chant my names and I'll be there. Abhina Tvam Namanamano. So Krishna is so kind to give us this opportunity to be with him, to associate with him. So Krishna is taking all of Arjuna's arguments and throwing them upside down. So he's criticizing him for wanting to leave the battlefield. And again, the reason why we're speaking about this is that we sometimes want to do the right thing, but we have so much trouble doing the right thing. We have so many other conflicting desires, and the mind gives so much trouble. So to save us in Kali Yuga, we have to be deep, sincere, and prayerful, and associate with devotees, and hear Bhagavatam and chant Krishna's names in the association of devotees. Otherwise, we get pulled in so many directions, and Krishna wants us to fight on the battlefield, and we'll go to fight one day, and then we'll think, I need a break from fighting, and then we'll go back, and then, yes, I should go forward, no, I should go back, or I should go sideways, or let me take a little rest first, and then I'll find out, and then take a lunch break, a long lunch break. In the mind, I don't want to do it, I do want to do it, I want to do it and don't want to do it at the same time, I want to do it but I want to do something else also, just on and on and on and on, I want to do it but here are my conditions, I need this, 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 and this. And Krishna just criticizing Arjuna's, he's going to criticize each and every one of Arjuna's wonderful excuses, compassionate excuses for not simply doing what Krishna wants. So going back to the point where Arjuna was thinking that, I'm so selfless and compassionate, I won't fight and kill these people, not even in exchange for the kingdom. And Krishna saying, then in text 35, the great generals who have highly esteemed your name and fame will think that you have left the battlefield out of fear only, and they will consider you insignificant. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words, and they will scorn your ability what could be more painful for you than your enemies? The people who are always criticizing you anyway have found finally the right excuse. Like the man was telling us today. This was an interesting one, Sitaram. You probably won't like it, but this man was living in Kalamunda. And he said, two of the senior counselors, he knows, and he said that what they told them, the reason why they should vote against it, they'd never do it, is because we're going to have to pay for the parking bays, the taxpayers. It's going to cost you taxpayers $8,000 a bay, and no matter what religion it is, you're going to have to pay for it. This is what he said that they told him. Funny, yeah. It's politics. That's what they said. They're already your enemies, and then they make up these stories about you. And these people believe it. And he couldn't even. You were explaining it to him, and he couldn't even understand it. But why would the taxpayers? It's on our land. Why would the taxpayers be paying for the parking bays? And he said, I don't want to pay for it. anyway, this is what he said that they were preaching to them. Crazy. Mm-hmm. And the people are maybe less intelligent or something. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? Oh, but now he's going to change it. Before you were saying that if you fight, you'll go to hell, and if you don't fight, you won't commit sin, so you'll be elevated. And Krishna was just saying that if you don't do your duty, you'll be committing sin. And if you do your duty, you'll go to heavenly planets. And then he changes it. Now he's going to speak on it. So he's going to summarize this. O son of Kunti, either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. So Arjuna was saying, if I win the battle, I'll have killed so many people. And because I've killed so many people, I'll get so much sin. And the result of sin is going to hell. And if I win the battle, all the people who I want to be with will be dead. So whether I win or lose, I lose. And Krishna says just the opposite. If you are killed on the battlefield, in other words, if you lose, then you'll go to heaven. And you'll either that or you'll conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom, and then you've won. So Arjuna said, it's a lose-lose for me if I fight. And Krishna says, no. It's a win-win. You win whatever happens. Therefore, fight. But this again isn't what Krishna really wants to say, that you'll materially benefit and therefore you should fight. Yes, he wants them to fight, but the real reason he wants them to fight is to do it in the right consciousness. Because you can do the same thing, the fighting, I want to fight so I don't go to hell. I want to fight so I go to heaven. I want to fight because it's my duty, I'm a Kshatriya. Or, I want to fight it, Namitta Karan Bhava Savya Sachin, just so that Krishna is pleased. Because he wants me to participate in this battle. So, you could be doing the same activity, but the consciousness in which we do the activity is the essential thing. It's the most important. So therefore, it's Krishna consciousness that we want to develop. Consciousness of Krishna, and not consciousness of Krishna like Kamsa was conscious of Krishna, but consciousness of Krishna like Arjuna is conscious of Krishna, and in loving friendship, and wishing to please him, and surrendered, wanting to serve him. So there's a vast difference. So we can ask ourselves, what consciousness, who is the center? When I do my service, I'm giving class, now who am I trying to please? Whatever I'm doing, who am I trying to please? That's what we want to be doing, yes, exactly. We want to be doing it not so that people will think that we're wonderful or we'll get something profit on the subtle or gross level, but just simply that Krishna and Krishna's dear Vaishnavas are pleased. Then the consciousness is right. Because as soon as we want to take something for ourselves from it, then it's not Shuddha Bhakti, it's not pure devotional service. And then Krishna will always act to purify us in some way or another out of his kindness. So we want to act. So therefore Krishna says in text 38, do thou fight for the sake of fighting. Do thou fight. You should fight for the sake of fighting. Without consideration of happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing, you shall never incur sin. So Prabhupada actually says something in the purport here, because it's Krishna saying it. Anyway, Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting because he desires the battle. And this is the point. Krishna is saying you should fight. So Arjuna should fight because Krishna is telling him to fight. Not really so he'll gain heaven, the planets. Not really so that he won't go to hell. Not really so that people won't speak badly about him. Not really because he's not his body. But really he should fight. So because Krishna desires him to fight. And this is what ultimately is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. Savadamam pratyajam mamikam saranam vraja. Surrender to me. Act in such a way that I am pleased, Krishna says. That I am satisfied. And Krishna wants Arjuna to be his instrument in this battle. And through Arjuna, Krishna, who is not participating in the battle, he's on the battlefield as the chariot driver, but through Arjuna, Krishna, through his potency coming through Arjuna, he's going to kill all the warriors on the opposing side. Not all, but millions of people. His killing Shakti is going to be, his warrior Shakti is going to be coming through Arjuna. Now why doesn't Krishna just do it himself? Because one reason is he wants his devotee Arjuna to get the credit. Such a powerful warrior. Look how powerful he is. He defeated everyone in battle. Another reason is because Krishna can say, I didn't do anything. I just was driving the chariot. Arjuna did it. But later on, after Krishna departs from this world, later on it's described in the first canto, actually, of the Bhagavatam, that Krishna has told right before he leaves, Dwaraka comes. You know who Dwaraka is? Krishna's chariot driver. Same as Dwaraka. And Krishna calls for him and he says, I want you to bring the message to Dwaraka, because all the Yadav dynasty has already killed themselves in their fraternal fight, and Balaram has already departed, and Krishna too is just about to leave. And the last person he sees in Uddhava and Maitreya Rishi were there, and they had gone. And then Krishna calls for Dwaraka. And he says, go to Dwaraka, and tell Arjuna that in 3 days from today, I think it's 3 days, the sea will inundate the whole city of Dwaraka. And you should leave with my father and mother and a few of the other dynasties, such as Vajanab and all my queens, and you should go to Hastinapur Arjuna, you should go and take them there. So while Arjuna was taking the, so Krishna, Arjuna immediately hearing what Dwarika said, he left, and then indeed the city of Dwarika was inundated right after he left. And then it was covered by water, the water of the ocean, Arabian Sea, maybe. What sea is it over there? Persian Gulf, what is it? The same thing as Bombay. What ocean is that over there? Yeah, so it's the same one. So then it came in, the sea smashed everything, and then while Arjuna, the great powerful warrior, was bringing the queens to Krishna's queens to Hastinapur, then some cowherd men came and attacked Arjuna. Arjuna, who had killed the mightiest warriors in the world in the battlefield, who had so many weapons, so many empowered weapons, he was defeated by these cowherd men. And by the time he arrived back in Hastinapur, and he saw Yudhisthira, he was so dejected because he had been defeated. That means that Krishna had given him the power, and when he left, he took away his power. That's one meaning. There are other meanings too. So Krishna actually had killed all the people in the battle of the Kurukshetra. Already, that's what in the 11th chapter in the Universal Form, Krishna says this. He says, that these people are already killed by me, by my potency of time. And I want you, Namitta Karam Babisavisachin, I want you to be my instrument. So Krishna was killing them. It was Krishna who was killing them through Arjuna. This is called Avesh, where the potency of the Lord enters into a Shakti Avesh. The Shakti of the Lord enters into a devotee, and Krishna works through that devotee. So that's Krishna worked through Arjuna. So he says here, do thou fighting for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by so doing, you shall never incur sin. So Prabhupada, this will be the beginning of the purport. Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting because he desires the battle. There's no consideration of happiness or distress, profit or gain, victory or defeat in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna, his transcendental consciousness. Everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna. What do we mean when we say, when Prabhupada says, for the sake of Krishna? Yeah, for his pleasure, for Krishna's sake. For his gain. Let Krishna be pleased. So then, in 39, thus, Krishna continues, thus far I have now described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen, as I explain it, the same knowledge, but from a different point of view, in terms of working without fruit of result. So detached work. So Krishna has explained a few things. He's explained this jnana, that you're not your body. He's explained to work in different, to do the fighting or to do your work on different levels of consciousness, and the ultimate being fight just so Krishna will be pleased for the sake of Krishna. But now listen as I explain the same knowledge to you in terms of working without fruit of result. Work but with detachment, O son of Prita. When you act in such knowledge, the knowledge of work with detachment. You can free yourself from the bondage of work. So this is karma, or action, plus knowledge. And this is karma yoga, in a sense, that you work, not inactive, but not fruitive work, work with detachment based on knowledge. So this is a combination of karma and jnana. And this is yoga, because it will connect one to Krishna. And this is the practical use of one's intelligence. Not that one will give up work, but one should work with the proper intellectual understanding that will cause detachment from the fruit of one's work. So let's read some of Prabhupada's purport here. Arjuna has already, this is on page 124, do you have the same pagination there?
Mm-hmm.
This is from the middle paragraph.
Yeah.
Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as his spiritual master by surrendering himself unto him. Shishasyaham sarimam tam papanam. Consequently, Krishna will now tell Arjuna, him, about the working process of buddhi yoga or karma yoga. In other words, the practice of devotional service only for the sense gratification of the Lord. This buddhi yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, who is sitting as Paramatma in everyone's heart. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service to the Lord, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to the stage of buddhi yoga, where Krishna tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipovagam dadami buddhi yogam tam, that Krishna, in devotional service, he is instructing one on how to act and giving one the intelligence and the buddhi realization of how to come to him. This one attains to the stage of buddhi yoga, Krishna consciousness, by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only to those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love does he award the pure knowledge of devotion in love. In that way, the devotee can reach him easily in the ever-blissful kingdom of God by Krishna's mercy. And Krishna awards that to devotees by his special grace. So we shall stop here, and we shall hear about this. This is a wonderful section, actually. Very many important verses. But we shall stop here now. 39. Any questions or comments?
Can you know that you're doing your prescribed duty if it's where you find yourself, whatever situation you find yourself in, and then you just surrender to Krishna in that situation and offer your work and your activities to Krishna?
Sometimes, but that's an interesting general principle. Sometimes we find ourselves in a situation that are not our prescribed duty also. And then that principle won't work that you just said. But if you're in a situation and you have no choice, then you might as well just accept it and then do what you say. But sometimes we're in situations, but we should really be doing better. And then we should do that. Try our best to do better. Now sometimes we should change our situation. Sometimes our situation causes us to go downward. But sometimes we have no choice also. So when we're in doubt about whether we should, whether our situation is the one that we should surrender to or not, then it's good if we have people we can ask. It's always good to have people to consult with, devotees to consult with. What do you think?
I think so, but sometimes it's difficult to, like the attachment and aversion, it's difficult to get rid of the things that are unfavorable for your spiritual life.
Yeah, but so sometimes we're in situations where we have, either because of our capacity or just the situation, that we don't have much choice. So then we just do the best we can, sincerely trying our best. Say if someone's in prison, because so many situations in the material world are like prison. Let's say if you're in prison, so you can't really say it's your prescribed duty to be in prison, not in the Vedic sense, but you don't have very much choice when you're in prison, so you should act in such a way that Krishna is pleased in that circumstance, unfortunate circumstance.
Could we see that in terms of like a lot of, you know, say situation like most of us have to work to some degree or
in jobs, you
know, in order to maintain ourselves.
Yeah.
How much advancement can we actually make in that situation? And maybe you, like it's our duty, obviously. It's we need to do that in order to survive. But as well as that, so much of our time, so much of our energy.
But how do we rationalize that? How do we
kind of remain feeling encouraged?
By having such a nice devotee daughter like Kalindi.
Can you still make advancement in
the
situation?
Of course. Of course. Because there's no material limitations in Krishna consciousness. Ultimately everything depends on doing things as a devotional offering to Krishna with bhakti, and ultimately on Krishna's causes mercy, on how he chooses to reciprocate with us.
Sometimes maybe our duty is like it maybe seems to be somewhat contradictory to, professional service, basically, our chanting may be compromised, our reading may be minimized, our, practical application of the, we can't be fully engaged in Krishna service.
I mean, there's so many things can be said about this. One could say that it's good to think only if I could do more and be more fully engaged. But then sometimes, depending upon who we are and what our situation is, that kind of thoughts are just our mind giving us trouble. So depending upon who the person is, either tell them, it's okay, just do the best you can, or yes, you should feel bad about it. So, depending upon which is going to be helpful for the person. Because sometimes it's just, because if it's just our mind giving us trouble, no matter what we do, say if our mind is going to give us trouble, so it's just our mind giving us trouble. So, then our business is just to not take our mind seriously and just be happy in whatever situation. We are and count our blessings, so to speak. But it's yes, for some people it's good to lament only if I could be doing more and things like that. But for some people it's just the opposite. They should just be happy being able to do something and being humble and happy. That's the thing, just thinking, well, I wish I could do more, but because I'm such a fallen soul, let me serve those who have the capacity to do more, and just be a humble servant in that way, servant of a servant, and then Krishna will really appreciate that kind of sort of humbly satisfied service. But for other people, you know, they could be doing more, but they're not doing more, and therefore they need to be pushed a little bit. So if you're asking what would be best for you, personally, that's what I thought. I was going to ask you, you can ask your Prabhu, and he will tell you exactly what to do, of course. And if he doesn't tell you what to do, certainly Kalindi is probably always telling you what to do. That's the nature of teenagers.
Your book, the Japa book.
Yeah.
That has been life changing for me because I was always
getting better or worse.
Because it actually it keeps reminding you, don't listen to your mind. Don't listen to it, and it's just like liberating to think I don't have to take any notice of this thing that's talking to me all the time.
Yeah, just try to hear. Well, I also that's how it's best for me to say it as well. Forget it. Neglect the mind. I probably said that's the best training for the mind. But the mind is very clever. But if somehow or another, by the blessings of Krishna, we get a little bit of a taste for the holy names, then it becomes so easy. See it.
Somewhere that being humble and tolerant doesn't mean that you have to tolerate the material world or what people, you know, materialistic world, because obviously they are, it's kind of Kaliyug. What do you think does it mean?
It means that you should serve Krishna and depend on his mercy and be tolerant of all the inconveniences that come to you as you're trying to serve. Something like that.
Basically, I mean, like, if someone's cheating you, obviously you don't allow that person to cheat you, but that shouldn't disturb you. Would that, in that way?
Mm-hmm. It's just natural to get disturbed when someone's cheating you. But don't get so disturbed that you kill the person. Then you go to jail. It means don't get into the mode of ignorance. Just quickly try to get it back to the mode of goodness so your mind is peaceful again. Just act practically. But humble means that, and tolerant means that you give people respect but don't demand any respect for yourself. You're respectful to others but don't demand respect for yourself, and like a tree. That you should help others and be tolerant of your own difficulties in the service of Krishna. But it doesn't mean being foolish. Being humble doesn't mean being foolish.
Yes, you just don't accept everything. Like, say someone's teaching you prizes or something like that, for example.
But that's one example. But another example, say if you're walking down the street and someone bumps into you.
And that's always a different thing.
Don't be foolish, obviously. Have you ever been to Bombay? If you're humble, you'll never get on a train. In that sense. Or you won't be able to cross the street ever, even. So that's not practical. Krishna consciousness is always practical. You think, oh, who am I to be able to push others out of the way? No, it's not practical. Okay.